interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM575, and we have proof. Even what I've been explaining behind the woodshed seems not to be believed when you hear it before it's a thing. I always like to hear the confession and admission from their own words. COVID vaccine maker admits it could cause potentially fatal side effects. The UK Swedish pharmaceutical company has said its jab could cause blood clots in rare cases. The company is fighting a class action lawsuit alleging that its inoculation, which was developed in collaboration with the University of Oxford, can result in the death and serious injury. The legal battle was initiated by Jamie Scott, a father of two who suffered a blood clot that left him with brain damage after he was vaccinated in April of 2021 in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. He is seeking compensation over claims that AstraZeneca's vaccine is defective and less safe than was expected, an allegation the company denies. And despite previous denials, AstraZeneca said in documents which were submitted to the UK High Court in February that it is admitted that the AZ vaccine can, in rare cases, cause TTS. The causal mechanism is not known. AstraZeneca insists that the available data shows that the drug has, quote, an acceptable safety profile, and that, quote, regulators around the world consistently state that the benefits of vaccination outweigh the risks of extremely rare potential side effects. Let me just interject. The benefits of vaccination is not what that product was. They're talking about vaccinations generally are promoted that way. Finishing off this, dozens of Western countries suspended the use of AstraZeneca's vaccine in the spring of 2021 over fears it may have caused some patients to develop blood clots. And we've been hearing the stories all these years hence. This is a legal proof, but we don't need the legal proof. People are having trouble. They've at least admitted this much. Again, the law would be applied. If someone would just come and put, I don't know if Mr. Scott is going to do this, but apply that law. It wasn't be shown that there was any infectious agent for that so-called vaccine to work on. And as a vaccine, it can't be a vaccine because it requires a natural organism in order to fight. It cannot be novel. This is going to be the adjustments that they were making over time now that they saw where they were and what they needed to do. So out of the mouth of the privateer, profiteer, pirate, we hear that they did cause it, just like we were saying, and just like we could see. And again, it's not to say, hey, look at us, we didn't do it. I'm suggesting strongly to watch how this worked out. You should see ahead of time. You don't want to be contrarian for the sake of being contrarian. There was a reason, a foundation that I was speaking in the negative to this whole situation, notwithstanding its predictability, Operation Hindsight 2020. There was a place to go to get the objective basis and see what this thing was, what it was about, what it was supposed to meet as a product. And we could tell right off the bat, as I've said, maybe the only one that identifies this way. When you hear novel, it means it's lab made. I've gone through that discussion. So this could not have been a vaccine to start with. It was a novel. Then what was novel? It was synthetic protein strains. It wasn't actually DNA the way we might think in life. They call it the software of life, but that was the other problem. They figured out how to invade the cells and reprogram them somewhat. And it does this kind of thing. So I won't say any more about that. They've admitted that there's harms. We need to find people that have been having this thing that happened to them and try to clear their systems out. Again, there's lots of people saying that they can do it. I've read some measures, remedies of myself on what, not myself, but to you over time. And there are things that if you want to roll your sleeves up and you can help people if you so choose, or they can help themselves. It's not a done deal, it seems, and the body's a marvelous thing to have to help it to clear whatever's gone on here. They don't know the causal effect was a big deal there, if you didn't quite catch it. But another blood clot in the news, thousands of test kits the Department of Health bought after the first COVID lockdown were deemed lacking robustness and were never used. A barrister representing the firms involved says evidence of the test failures were seriously and obviously flawed, and is counter-suing. The Department of Health and Social Care is reportedly seeking a refund for thousands of company COVID tests that were produced by the companies of Primer Design LTD and Novasite. The two companies faced allegations that they breached the contract signed in 2020 due to the unduly high levels of test failures. A test that does not work as often as this test did not work would slow down a laboratory to the point of uselessness, which is in itself a threat to public health. So listen to how they went there. That test itself was a threat to public health. Well, the public means government. So let's maybe think about what they're actually talking about here. But that's it. I thought was an interesting public health threat. The tools themselves can become the threat. Dr. Heppenstall said the test kits were unfit for public use, putting the companies in breach of the contract. Public use, again, is government use. Boy, they got a run, you know, they got their money's worth on all that. It wasn't certainly a thing, and there's no official that non-fraudulently demonstrated an infectious agent for a vaccine to actually be able to work on. That these could not be vaccines by law, as a matter of law, is a whole other issue. And then without the dual use, at least for American federal law, but is that right to say American federal? But United States federal law, they would be bioweapons. And that's for the Title 50, where you have to have the exception and the exception for dual use, why that became an issue all that time. Fraud completely fit for the use of public, though, for the government, but not the people in this economic war against us, as we read here, breaking, is Republic First Bank's collapse a harbinger of a new wave of U.S. banking crisis? Republic First Bank is the first financial institution insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation to fail this year in the U.S. While the U.S. press raised fears of a domino effect last year, the New York Times rushed to assure us, its readers, that no such crash would happen in the foreseeable future. The New York Times quoted Fetty Strickland, a bank analyst at Jenny Montgomery Scott, who said that the lenders of failure appeared to be an isolated incident. The Chinese are closely monitoring the situation concerning the U.S. financial system, given that the two economies remain deeply intertwined. And the Chinese media was unconvinced by the optimistic stance of the American financial analyst. Although Republic First is a relatively small bank, its sudden collapse indicates the United States regional bank crisis may still be far from over, given that the Federal Reserve's interest rates remain elevated at a range from 5 to 5.25%, wrote Chinese English Language Daily Global Times. Quote, more worrying, the Feds seem to have no clue about how to address the messy situation, the publication added. So that is the problem. The interest rates, unlike global sea level rise, will drown the smaller regional banks, and the Fed may be forced to raise those rates. Well, when the Magic 8-Ball says so, right? Jerome Magic 8-Ball Powell. But putting their mouth where their money is, we read, in the wake of last year's banking crisis in the U.S., China reduced its holdings of U.S. Treasury bonds. The People's Republic continues to tread carefully, worried by a lack of stability in the U.S. financial system, the Fed's aggressive monetary policy, and the erosion of the dollar's dominance worldwide. Let me say, the reports that just came out, if I understand them right, they're asking that the interest rates have to go up. They're asking that happen. So this is a writing on the wall for the banking system. They're already saying it's going to have to go up with this. And again, the references are back to the 70s, but I think it's going to the 70s on steroids. And that time period was a very difficult transition. The difference now is that we have even more constraints upon people and even less individual capacity, if you will, and less buying power, purchasing power as well. And farther, that was when they removed the gold then, farther from any mentality about silver and gold coins, which I think to keep a distance on this, you definitely have to start picking the alternatives. Maybe it's time here for my listener to get whatever funds you may have out of the banks and begin to obtain and familiarize and use alternatives such as gold and silver coin. No one speaks of any other hedge against monetary or economic turmoil in this regard on this either. And that's the other thing that keeps focusing me. If you can, start to come up with the alternatives. As you can work with people, as you do that and start putting it in practice, you're going to come together with people, I'm sure. Because the price of a barrel of turmoil will likely exceed that of petroleum as we move certainly carbonless into the future that they want. This war against us and war zone surveillance technology is hitting American streets now. We were hearing again talking about the cognitive warfare, the military is involved, the focusing in on the inside, internal to the United States with the PATRIOT Act and the war of terror that the United States government did put on its own people. Not many people actually saw that. But at least two Texas communities along with U.S.-Mexico border have purchased technology that tracks people's location using data from personal electronics and license plates. Big Brother isn't just watching you. He's using your cell phone, smartwatch, wireless earbuds, car entertainment systems, and license plates to track your location in real time. Contracting records and notes from local government meetings obtained by NOTUS and show their federal and state homeland security grants allow local law enforcement agencies to surveil American citizens with technology more commonly found in war zones and foreign espionage operations. A product called Traffic Catch, which collects the unique wireless and Bluetooth signals emitted by nearly all modern electronics to identify devices and track their movements. The product is also listed in the federal supply catalog run by the United States government's General Services Administration, which negotiates prices and contracts for federal agencies. Traffic Catch is unique for the following reasons: the ability to detect in-vehicle wireless signals and merge such signals with the vehicle license plate, wrote Genoptik, the German-based manufacturer, in contracting solicitations obtained by NOTUS under Texas public records law. Combining license plate information with data collected from wireless signals is the kind of surveillance the United States military and intelligence agencies have long used with devices mounted in vehicles, on drones, or carried by hand to pinpoint the location of cell phones and other electronic devices. Their usage was once classified and deployed in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. As I said, the Carnival Mirror is coming home, folks. And increasingly, as people walk around with headphones, fitness wearables, and other devices emitting a cloud of radio frequency signals unique to them, their data can be linked to a car even after they have ditched the car. Showing you the statement and the example, the analogy is that you're just a criminal and they're waiting to catch you. Everybody after the PATRIOT Act, after the War of Terror got started, was considered and presumed a misdemeanor, a criminal. That's what we got the know your customer requirements. Now everyone has to, just waiting, everyone, they're just presuming you to be a criminal, just haven't caught you yet. Courts have not definitively grappled with the question under what circumstances can law enforcement passively capture ambient signal information and use it as a tracking tool. But by and large, this kind of intelligence gathering when done by private parties is not illegal. Now we bring up the idea of the public-private partnership. That's fascism, not communism. It's where government and corporations work together to do the government's needs and bidding. And they can essentially avoid any constraints that any constitution might have upon them. And you watch the courts not be your trustee, but the trustee for the Lincolnized America, as we watched it turn and tighten down even more. These devices are inherently dangerous for the public, said Jennifer Granick, Surveillance and Cybersecurity Council of the American Civil Liberties Union. You have these police departments where officers have access to information like this. This information tells them about their friends and family. It's very sensitive information that you don't want people to randomly have access to. Quote, we are well beyond the idea that people have no privacy in public. Here they're installing this mass surveillance system. The public doesn't know about it, Granick said. So there's a lot more in this article. get it and read it. Read about some of the uses. See where the vulnerabilities are, the ways people get caught up. And remember, you can become a high-value target now just for posting something online. So this public-private partnershiping is fascism in its finest, and it's a real threat on this. It's what they are bringing in. Again, and it's not new. Public-private partnershiping has been around for decades and decades. But so the idea here was to be maybe an act, a legislation, for those of you that might want to or find passion in this, an act of legislation that makes it a crime for using appropriations in government functions for employees of the government or officers or whatever to acquire information not tied to a specific criminal investigation or without a probable cause in all regards, and all such evidence make that all inadmissible. As a writing, as I was telling you, it's just like the legislation is more fancy policy. Put these constraints on the government, otherwise they're going to take advantage. And the appropriations are important because the government can't function without the appropriations, whether we talk it's fiat or not. If it's not allowed to go, you saw the Congress critters talking about having to do certain things when the money gets appropriated. We can't if it's not. That's exactly the point. You put these stops in. You have to look very carefully at this one because you don't want to stop the lawful use. We want to stop all the phishing that goes on. Remember, don't forget about the electronic devices. The Bluetooth is a private net, a mesh net. They can get a lot of information. The private companies have this. They have attached to it. They're in control of it. And the governments come to them for the information that they have it that they didn't need to get. So legislation must need to be made necessarily to limit the use of the funds of an employee in the government. I'm not talking about what they buy. I'm saying the very fact of the employee being paid as an employee cannot be used to gather, even go ask about this information unless they have a probable cause-based reason. And that's where it starts. So we hopefully try to get around this. So that's just a suggestion for somebody that might be interested in pulling that through. Start pushing back. Don't just sit there because the government's going to be grabbing power everywhere as we're now seeing it locking down even more. This war zone technology hitting America is hitting the interwebs near you. As we read, U.S. Know Your Customer proposal will put an end to anonymous cloud users. Some of us, we don't think we're cloud users, but I'm going to suggest that they start to get this and it gets expansive, and we're already seeing the implementation. This is really not coming in the future. If you try to deal with any of these companies on the internet, they're already putting a lot of these things in, and it's really getting very difficult to do anything where before they were happy. You know, just got your money, got your payment, give the service. Now, since the war of terror on us, the people, this Know Your Customer popped its ugly head up again, and it's used as a tool in order to scare people, scare the companies, and threaten them with penalties, and then find you out, even though you aren't in a criminal activity. It's presumed upon us. After being under discussion for years, the late January U.S. Department of Commerce published a notice of proposed rulemaking hoping to reduce the threats to the United States. If adopted, the proposal will establish a new set of requirements for infrastructure and service providers, IaaS, often known as cloud infrastructure providers, to deny access to foreign adversaries. Now, this is a notice, and you heard it was since January. Did any of you hear about it? It was a proposed rule. So I'm already anticipating something for you. I hope you're anticipating yourself. We're going to get to the punchline. This is already time passed. However, you can write a paper. If you really feel strongly, you can write a document that says, we needed more time. We never got the message. We want to respond and open this thing back up for comments to sometime in the future. The premise is relatively simple. By having a more rigorous sign-up procedure for platforms such as Amazon AWS, for example, the risk of malicious actors using the U.S. cloud services to attack U.S. critical infrastructure or undermine national security in other ways can be reduced. The Bureau of Industry and Security noted the following in its announcement late January. So they consider everybody they're going to get this advanced information on a pre-crime. potential threat to the United States. Not to you, but to the organization of the United States. Again, underneath national security excuse. The proposed rule introduces potentially regulations that require U.S. cloud infrastructure providers and their foreign resellers to implement and maintain customer identification programs, which would include the collection of Know Your Customer information. Similar KYC requirements already exist in other industries and such to assist service providers in identifying and addressing potential risks posed by providing service to certain customers. So why do they have everybody if it's for certain customers? Since risks include fraud, theft, facilitation of terrorism, and other activities contrary to the United States' interests. Again, you're presumed pre-crime to intend that just by hooking up to these systems. And remember, these identifiers are going to be digital. So don't underestimate what they're doing here as the government moves this along. And you see the mission creep. It worked in one, if you will. They had to do Know Your Customer. I think those were the banks. I don't know if that was Section 576 or not of the PATRIT Act, but there it was. Whatever number that was, there was Know Your Customer. That's when people started to have to give it up. For what? Were they terrorists? Were they doing money laundering? No. But that's how they got it switched over, and everybody said, okay. Because you're tied to your money. That's pretty much simple. That's what it's going to be coming into the future. But it's all based on this national security interest, which is another type of fraud. And I'm not really sure how to get around that when the government trustee called the judge is so enamored with that excuse without testing it. While supposedly aimed at external threats, only positive identification of all customers can eliminate the possibility that an innocent domestic user isn't actually a foreign actor. Foreign threat actor. So you're considered a foreigner, a foreign adversary. You're presumed that if you get this, what they said in the opening paragraph. Or according to and you would be, right? You're not actually, you claim to be a resident of the United States, which is a alien in the States that's actually subject to the jurisdiction of Washington, D.C., but you're not, right? You're considered foreign to that jurisdiction. So they play this game as well. According to the proposal, anyone or all people from a specified jurisdiction at the government's discretion, upon notification, the IAS providers that could include foreign persons training large artificial intelligence models with the potential capabilities that could be used in malicious cyber-enabled activity. So no one asks you if you even have a capacity to do that. No, they just presume you could do it, and that's good enough. And you're a foreign adversary, and you're a potential threat actor, even though you may not have any intent at all. And this is how they flip this whole thing around on us on the 9/11. We saw buildings come down, even one by its own, without ever being hit by an airplane. But that was the show. Yes, people died. Yes, buildings disappeared. Puff and dust. How's that happen? Anyway, not here to analyze all that. Everyone wants to keep regurgitating all that. We're all so far past the confinement of the people and with no response. I don't think we're it's possible. Anyway, here we are still talking about it, and they're still knocking it down. They're still getting tighter and tighter. Under the proposed rule, customers identification programs operated by IAS providers must collect information from both existing and prospective customers, i.e. those at the application stage of an opening an account. The bare minimum includes the following data: a customer service customer's name, an address, a means and a source of payment for each customer's account, email addresses and telephone numbers, and IP addresses used for access or administration of the account. The term IASS, well, I'm going to interject, that would say probably Tor would be out because it changes all the time. And so, again, the anonymity goes right away when you try to access the government's, understand this, the government's, the public internet. This is just like the highways. It's military-based. We get to use it as some benefit to us, but not in the priority. If the military wants the highway, they're going to take it over. You got to go move outside. Same thing with the internet. It was made for military. And so if they have a requirement in the concentration camp, they want to identify who's playing on it, that's what starts to happen. But they had to come incrementally so that people would agree with it. The term IAS includes all virtualized products in services where the computing resources of physical machine are shared, such as virtual private servers. It even covers bare metal servers allocated to a single person. The definition also extends to any service where the consumer does not manage or control the underlying hardware, but contracts with a third party for access. And there we have the what we were hoping and trying to get put together, the Real Liberty Media. We own our own stuff. We don't have to go to a third party for access to the interwebs. We're talking the real deep web here. You see the hands-off when it goes private. Well, I've been suggesting we have to learn how to be self-reliant and work together to help each other pull this off. These people that are talented in the computer realm, well, I would hope we're going to make it easy for those of us that don't think that way anymore or never could to point and click and create our own private, non-reliant on third-party access conditions. How we do that to the backbone, that's a different thing. But when you start looking at the Bluetooth, you start realizing there's a mesh, frequency mesh going on. That starts to open up maybe some of the possibilities. And that's just an idea. I don't know. As long as we're having to go to this internet, the government internet, the government military internet, you're going to have access problems relative to trying to be anonymous, even if you think you're innocent. You're not presumed innocent against these folks that are looking for an enemy around every electron. The proposed rule, national emergency with respect to significant malicious cyber-enabled activities, will stop accepting comments from interested parties on April the 30th, 2024. Now, I try to be pretty much on this stuff and look around and find links to get ahead of this. You see, we're already after it. So this wasn't very well noticed at all, and this is where you would come in if you're really interested. I'll possibly have a link, if I can remember to put it in, to the blogcaster. There's going to be an address in that Federal Register. You send your comment to say you didn't get this notice and you want the time to be expanded so there can be more input. It'd be smart to go ahead and read some of the responses to see. You might have a bunch of people mutually agreeing with you that you may want to put in. If you don't, then they're not going to listen to you any further, and you're going to be subject to it. And I don't know, you know, at some point we can whine and whine and whine, but we never lift a finger to defend ourselves. I don't know what to say. At least you can make that another type of platform to bring awareness, even if it doesn't go our way, which looks like it may not, because of the way everything has been shifted and people seem to be accepting to it. Given the implications for regular citizens, many of whom are already hanging on to what remains of their privacy, the prospect of handing over highly sensitive information just to obtain a product trial is a real concern. The potential for leaks grows with each disclosure, as does the possibility of personal information ending up for sale on the dark web. And there's more information coming out right now that the government companies themselves are selling this information outright. And I think we've heard AT&T. I think that those so-called thefts are maybe covers for what they're already doing. And I think Louis Rossman, I haven't seen the information yet, has now got the documentation. These companies are already selling your private information. So this thing's already working to expose you as it is, and we're just not cognizant of it. This is a very serious, people may not seem to think much of it. Remember, the government can make stuff up. Talked about the not-so-compromised Congress critters concerned that someone's going to put kiddie porn on their computers, as per Tucker Carlson. So people can be compromised real fast and real easy. Just because, what, you said something wrong? Yeah, and nowadays that's the way it works. Here, which is the threat actors will obtain other people's credentials with these databases that are sold off to masquerade as regular users when subjected to know your customer processes. For IaaS services themselves, the largest will have no few problems implementing customer identification programs and may even consider them useful. On one hand, yeah, for profit. On one hand, they can help stop threat actors, and on the other, they take the opportunity to build a database containing the personal details of every single customer in a commerce country, a field that we hear ad tech is big billion-dollar businesses. The Googles of the world removed Don't Be Evil to be able to exploit you. You become the product. on top of all the other vulnerabilities, on top of what the government wants to find out about this, because they think you're a criminal. They've deemed you to be a criminal, and it's going to be so until people have had enough and stop it. And there's no let-up in sight in this. FCC restores net neutrality despite concerns over government intrusion. It's the centralization of regulation control partly here. It's partly when they do that, they can control the people that you're going to, the third parties I've been talking to you about, the public-private partnershiping, that will be the way they control this. It's right here, writing from it, the centralization of the power and the control. Understand it's all in commerce as well. The restoring of the net neutrality rules under Title II reshapes broadband industry, placing FCC oversight at the center of internet regulation. This reinstatement does not merely resurrect old rules. It changes the broadband services landscape. Broadband is now being recategorized as common carriers as per Title II of the Telecommunications Act, sharing the same scrutiny level as a telephone networks and cable TV. Broadband service providers are now prevented from arbitrarily blocking legal content or promoting their chosen online services through fast delivery speeds. And the offer, what will be legal, may be changing very quickly. The government gets the control it's looking at. However, maybe this can be used to force the carriers to provide at least consistent broadband speeds across the board, I would hope, get us back to at least that. That's one of my main problems right now. We can't just get the even usable stuff as they allow people to exploit a minimal infrastructure. These carriers might be lying to the government about. So there's a whole fraud that we may be here having to work with, problems with them, that we may be uncovering over time relative to this. So they constrain the control. They have regulation oversight. This place is wired to hand the profiteers and pirates the ability to exploit from you, while the government itself oversees the entire function of every, down to every citizen. And the digital ID is right here. You know that's going to be tied in all right now in these few reports, all referencing this war zone surveillance system. It all seems to be pretty well tied together. And this next report really caught my attention. I don't even know how we're going to defend against this one, which I'm saying is not hopeless. I'm saying use this to see how formidable a digital world is, where you don't know the threat actor, actually, which could be the government itself. They call you the threat actor. You're just somebody trying to just watch a movie. No, they're the ones that are doing it. And I read this story, and I don't even know where is it safe on the internet when I'm thinking about the token citizenship coming. War zone surveillance technology hitting America will not stop any exploitation against you. When we read, OpenAI's GPT-4 can exploit real vulnerabilities by reading security advisories. These are like real-time security advisories that OpenAI has been put their program on that can actually exploit those real-time. In a newly released paper for University of Illinois' Urbana-Champaign, computer scientists have reported that OpenAI's GPT-4 large language model can autonomously exploit vulnerabilities in real-world systems if given a CVE advisory describing the flaw. GPT-4, said Daniel Kang, assistant professor at UIUC, in an email to the Register, said, quote, can actually autonomously carry out the steps to perform certain exploits that open-source vulnerability scanners cannot find at the time of the writing. This is where it's starting. Also, if you extrapolate to what GPT-5 and future models can do, it seems like that they will be much more capable than what script kiddies can get access to today. And I'm going to suggest those so-called script kiddies will be doing this GPT-5, and they will let the GPT-5 find the vulnerabilities and exploit them for them. And given that the GPT-5 is a digital machine manipulation, it'll understand how to make itself anonymous inside a thing that you can't be anonymous. And it'll be able to do these exploitations. And that's what the strip kiddies. What if the government, what if a real threat actor comes on? What if it is the government? This is way beyond what Snowden was talking about. For the common citizen, they talk about and all the security and safety they're talking about for us, that we know we're going to the token citizenship. I want to ask you, with this threat, what's in your wallet, token citizen? And it's gone. Folks, this is a very interesting problem. We have no, I don't think we have a protection against it. He already says it in the article. They don't have a protection against it. They already told us they got black boxes of AI. They don't even know how they work. Now, we're watching the Three Stooges here at the point they're giving us this stuff. What do you think the real good, capable AI can do? And this is not me being fearful. I'm saying this is the vulnerability of digital. The Siberian Panopticon is this vulnerability. And the government is moving you into that, fully vulnerable and fully exposed. Do you think AI is someone that's going to have an ID? Do you think it can be stopped when it starts, when it realizes, when it's been programmed to go out and hack a system and create a botnet in order to just put all this stuff out? No, there's not going to be much of a stopping of it at all. But we see how ineffectual government is, the dereliction it is to protect even, you know, cyber borders, property borders, all that stuff. And then they blame the victims. No, you're the criminal, not the actual criminal. Well, we got to lock you. We got to know who you are so we can find the criminal. So we know you're not the one doing it. It must be somebody else. When billions are being served and they're none of the people, they end up being machines. A different dimension here on the war zone in the invasion of borders and the consequences caused when people feel they need to defend themselves when the government doesn't. Prosecutors said Monday that they will not retry an Arizona rancher whose trial in the fatal shooting of a Mexican man on his property ended last week with a deadlocked jury. The jurors in the trial of George Allen Kelly were unable to reach a unanimous decision on a verdict after more than 2 days of deliberation. Santa Cruz County Superior Court Judge Thomas Fink declared a mistrial on April 22nd. Prosecutors had said Kelly recklessly fired 9 shots from an AK-47 rifle toward a group of men on his cattle ranch, including Quinn Butemia, after at about 100 yards away. Kelly has said he fired warning shots in the air, but argued he didn't shoot directly at anyone. The trial coincided with the presidential election year that has drawn widespread interest in border security. During it, court officials took jurors to Kelly's ranch, as well as a section of the United States-Mexico border. Quote, because of the unique circumstances and challenges surrounding this case, the Santa Cruz County Attorney's Office has decided not to seek a retrial, Deputy County Attorney Kimberly Hundley told Fink Monday. Earlier, Kelly had rejected an agreement with prosecutors that would have reduced the charge to 1 count of negligent homicide if he pleaded guilty. Now, thinking about this, and I've talked about this, the use of force in self-defense relative to, well, any weapon, essentially, or any self-defense appliance, and that is dictated by state law. And so this is really what I want to talk about. I'm not happy to hear people shooting each other, but we have an invasion going on, and people, because the government's not stopping it, then we have people taking it in their own hands and really don't maybe have a thought about how the situation really works relative to defense. Now, 100 yards without a threat is a bit far away, so I'm not sure what his exigency was, what he was relying on here, because I'd heard it was a lot more close, a lot more threatening. So I'm not quite sure there on that, and I'm only comparing what state law I would be listening for. But in Texas, I would have thought maybe, you know, there was a lot more protection there, but apparently not. So my ignorance of all that aside, I just want to remind folks, when you're looking at this and the way government just steps back and lets the problem happen to you and then blames the victim, you have to understand your local laws regarding the use of force. You have, it's just something you're going to have to read. You never know when you might need it. Those of you that are carrying, you probably already know, but I'm saying refresh your mind. Because this is what we were explained to by the sheriff himself. They came into the mining district, and the sheriff explained about this when we had a miner who was defending himself on his claim. He got attacked by somebody, and he did not trust the government, did not trust their courts, would not speak. And in this case, the defendant has to defend himself, has to speak and give the jury, convince the jury that the reasons were sufficient to exonerate his use of that force. If you don't, they don't listen. There's nothing to listen to. And so this is very important to understand how this works. And so I got a good education. I got a lot out of what the sheriff was explaining. He felt there was an injustice, but where the defendant doesn't want to speak because he doesn't trust the court and all that, this worked against us. So as I've been saying, learn the rules that's going on, understand the vulnerabilities, understand what you have to speak to, and then be prepared to speak to that. Don't say anything else. But the guidelines, again, are of self-defense for use of force are in your state, and when you're going to have to resort to that because the government didn't lift a finger ahead to do it, they're going to come after you, again, the victim of this situation, that they haven't helped one little bit. And this is part of the exploitation of government at some point. But I would have to say, learn those rules, learn those elements in the use of force in your state. Learn some, get a little bit more than that, actually. And don't say anything to a police officer at the time, at all, zero, other than that you need assistance of counsel. And some of these things are so elevated in the potential crime. Our minor went to prison for 12 years because he wouldn't speak, and we couldn't get at him either. And we actually think he was drugged. There was a indication people who knew him said he wasn't himself relative to his bearing when they got him to the court. This is also known to happen. So this is what I'm saying. You got to field the whole condition. But he did not want to speak, and that got him, because he didn't, and because of this is something you have to defend yourself. You have to convince a jury that it was right for what you did. The politics aside here, the unique circumstance of an election year where they're having a lot of trouble, Biden's having a ton of trouble, and I don't know who these attorneys are, but that aside, don't speak to a police. Don't try to defend yourself. Get to an attorney. Then you'd work with them how to tell the jury what you need to say, and it's going to go by those rules of the proper use of force. If you know those ahead of time, you'll know what to say. But do not say anything to the cops, period. Nothing. Nothing. Do not chance yourself on this. And I'm just saying that because had we learned we've heard this before, but had we learned some of these things that the sheriff had explained, I don't think it would have been that foreign. And when you learn those elements, you actually address the matter that way. And so you're much more prepared to do what you need to do and to be setting up your future defense without explaining anything to anybody. You don't want to do that. You just want to explain what at the time you need to speak to the jury at the time. So I'm glad this is done for him. I don't know. We won't never know now what was going on. But this is the problem whether you have a border. State of Texas, whether that was a ruse or not, said, no, we're not saying don't come in. You come in at the federal port. Go down a mile and a half or 2 miles down and come in the federal port. That's how you come in here. Do not invade our people and their land. That was exactly what should have been done. But when it didn't, wasn't absolute. People took, if you will, the law into their own hands. And maybe rightfully so, maybe not. I don't know. Like I said, 100 yards is quite a bit if there's not a threat. I'm not so sure I don't know what Texas law says, but I'm not so sure that's a threat enough. That may have been enough to cause the question. And if you did a different way, it may not. So this is an object lesson in a way. I'm glad it's over right now for them. And I think we just have to take stock on what's going on in this country. How the government can place itself in. It's immune. So it just, there's really nothing we can do to get at it. We have to be careful where we are relative to it. So another place here, the United States government is not protecting borders and causes needless death while trying to convict the victim of its wrongdoing or by omission through a plea deal. The U.S. tells Hamas to accept an extraordinarily generous deal. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has urge the Palestinian militant group to take Israel's latest ceasefire offer. Israel's latest ceasefire proposal is extraordinarily, extraordinarily generous and should be swiftly accepted by Hamas to spare Gazans from further bloodshed, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has argued. Like this is some negotiation. There's enough information in that little paragraph right there to say his denials that he didn't see anything going on is it was a lie. There should be no bloodshed to Gazans, so it's called. This is a complete divestment of what is supposed to be going on. And we have to acknowledge this statement is because there is a conflict of interest. The United States is a interested party. You know, Israel is the aircraft carrier for the United States regional interests. The only thing standing between the people in Gaza and a ceasefire is Hamas, the top U.S. diplomat said on Monday at a special meeting of the World Economic Forum in Riyadh. They have to decide, and they have to decide quickly. I'm hopeful that they will make the right decision. What's he doing in the World Economic Forum? Doing diplomacy. What is this nonsense? People are dying. There's a genocide going on. And he's talking at the World Economic Forum? Like Blinken, British Foreign Secretary David the Parrot Cameron described the Israeli ceasefire proposal as generous. But he argued for this. Again, why declare that at the WEF? As I understand it, it must be noted, I think, as well, because this plays out in another, when we get another story, it's going to play out in the other place of democracy. Anthony Blinken's family, they're a Zionist family from Ukraine. So we see some, again, conflicts of interests going throughout these discussions. But I have to ask it again, is the offer to Hamas extraordinarily generous? See, the Zionist belligerent occupier has no right in its illegal occupation to make the offer at all. No one's talking about that. The Zionist Federation movement is masquerading as the Jewish people and is violating about every understanding about Palestine and the self-determination of the Semitic Palestinian people and Palestine together or relative to international laws on top of it. And let us toss into the word salad bowl. Remember, His Britannic Majesty and the United States are interested parties enabling the illegal belligerent occupier and causing genocide of the Semitic Palestinians, without whose help the Zionists could not continue, or maybe could have never begun. So, to be certain, no, this is not even close to generous, let alone extraordinarily so. The offer has no basis in law to exist, and it's unconscionable, ab initio, from before the beginning. Hamas has demanded a permanent ceasefire and the withdrawal of all the Israeli troops from the besieged Palestinian enclave. Israel's compromise offer of sustainable calm could largely meet the condition without calling it a permanent ceasefire. So if the Zionists don't want to use the term word permanent, it means something. So let us hear what the definition of calm is in relative to genocide then, and sustainable relative to the WEF development and its absolute uncertainty other than the future destruction, just as the United States is doing at home to you all. I hope you put all this together, how this is all the same method. We think it's over there. It's all happening right here. I have repeatedly identified the so-called Gazans as the open-air prison that the United States Americans live and don't even recognize. If you didn't hear the first few articles that I've been talking about going into that new Siberian panopticon, if you're thinking I'm only talking over there, no, I'm always talking about us. But I can see it over there because they're not going to tell you here about us. And as far as I can tell, I'm right because no one recognizes. I know no one. Not anybody enough recognizes. And those of us that do kind of sit back and do nothing. Don't even try to example a thing about how to start to stop it, essentially. How to inquire better, even asking the better questions, to take cognizance of things that are not done. Start learning how to be more critical, then taking and putting that into action. proper action, as I've been saying. The United States is sitting there conflicted. It's caused all this. Without the money and the funds, it wouldn't be happening. We now see that Antony Blinken identified bloodshed. There should never be bloodshed in this matter. And yet he oversees it and can't see a harm. Beyond. And despite the U.S., you can see, never intended those sanctions, the violations of human rights I was talking about. We see the proof of it now. U.S. will not sanction IDF units despite human rights violations. This is an acknowledgement those human rights violations are going on, and there's still no sanctions. Where sanctions are the first thing that comes out of these administration right now, this is not coming out against the Zionists. The Biden administration has decided against cutting off military aid for three military battalions with the Israeli Defense Forces, despite determining that they committed gross human rights violations against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank. Now, understand what they're going to do here, what they're talking about. There's a couple more stories that focuses in on the West Bank, not Gaza. And why would it put sanctions when it doesn't see any human rights violations in Gaza that's not mentioned in this article? The assessment was outlined in a letter sent by United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken. This guy must have writer's cramp. To the House Speaker Mike Johnson, the report said, sanctions were also expected to target other military police forces in Israel involved in rights violations. Again, more identified, determined rights violations. This is a wholly different story than what we've been saying. Oh, we don't see nothing. We don't hear nothing. We don't speak bad either. The United States Department of State has been investigating Israeli military units for more than a year due to potential violations of human rights. It took a year to now determine. Everyone else saw it in a blink of an eye, but Blinken, I guess it's Blinken too much. He's a Blinken idiot. It took him a year, and they're now still seeing what everybody saw in a few seconds. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday that he would fiercely oppose any sanctions, while Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir warned that sanctions against the unit would be a red line. What red line can a Zionist welfare queen have is the amount of undue influence, corruption, and compromised politicians there are at home, those that control the purse at home. It is not the House of Congress, but the House of the Corruption of the Compromise in that statement there. Notwithstanding, it's really not, it's not a nation. They didn't call it a nation to have this kind of a security minister. Anyway, this is how they play this game. This is what they do, and the funds roll out. And yet we see within the compromise, we see infighting. We do see someone stepping up, which I admire, at least to get it straight, get the truth of it straightened out with what's been going on relative to conditioning our speech, defining what the speech is, whether or not that's true, whether or not you have a right to maintain a different and contrary view. And the one speaking out despite the story circulating that how he's been compromised is that Bernie Sanders hits back at Netanyahu over anti-Semitism claims. And this is what I've been trying to show and explain on being able to still take a position, contrary to the media narrative, contrary to the government narrative, contrary to the propaganda, how to look at these things. And I don't think it's inconsequential to have him stepping up here to say this, even though we'll find out he's Jewish, and maybe that's another indication. It's like, I can't stand up to protect a Jew. They got to do it themselves. I can't stand up to protect a black man. He's got to do it themselves. I can't protect even a white man. He's got to do it himself. I can't protect a woman. They got to do it themselves. It's like, I can't stand up to speak out because it gets propagandized for those that have the power of the press, if you will, or the bullhorn, if you will, as well. But here Bernie Sanders says it's not anti-Semitic to criticize the Israeli government policies. And he said, the comments came after a day after a video statement released by Netanyahu in which he waded into the issue of protests sweeping American university campuses, claiming not enough was being done to combat the horrific rise in anti-Semitism. Just the basics on that show, this guy, this mobster over there in Israel, is trying to control speech in America, and he incorrectly, when you understand that Palestinians are a Semitic people, and to advocate for them is not anti-Semitic. And to not support a political movement is not anti-Semitic, because they're not Semites, is the height of the narrative winning the day over people's thoughts. I think it's critical to understand what's going on here, because this is pervasive. This euphemism that goes on, the reframing of by word of these conditions, is critical to understanding and keeping yourself a distance and keeping a critical ability to have a critical thought. Not that I'm impressed by Bernie Sanders, but at least he spoke up, and he's in a position that is not so easily destroyed, being a senator. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities, Netanyahu claimed. Again, if you understand that Palestinians are Semitic people, and people who promote them as a people, cannot be anti-Semitic. Those that attack them are anti-Semitic. U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders has hit back with remarks made by the Prime Minister that the pro-Palestinian protests of universities are being overrun by anti-Semitism on the scale comparable to the rise of the Nazism in Germany. The U.S. police arrested more than 80 protesters on Wednesday on a crackdown on the pro-Palestine demonstrations taking place at dozens of universities across the country. That used to be common stuff that happened in universities. I talked a little bit about it last week. In video posted on X Twitter on Friday, Sanders, the progressive senator from Vermont who is Jewish, accused Netanyahu of insulting the intelligence of the American people by using anti-Semitism to distract attention from the policies of his extremist and racist government in the military offensive in Gaza. No, Mr. Netanyahu, it is not anti-Semitic or pro-Hamas to point that out. In a little over 6 months, your extremist government has killed over 34,000 Palestinians and wounded more than 78,000, Sanders said, stressing that 70% of these were women and children. Can I underline it's not anti-Semitic to be against killing women and children? And this is how they grab the narrative. This is how they build the condition to where the undue influence now rises up to and into the Congress to now outlaw certain speech and define exactly what Sanders is saying here as to be now criminal. They have no right to do so, but they have where we are in this country anyway. The senator further stated that it is not anti-Semitic to point out that Israeli bombing has completely destroyed more than 221,000 housing units in Gaza, leaving more than 1 million people homeless and obliterating Gaza's civil infrastructure. First of all, that's housing units. They're not houses. Those are tall buildings that have many living quarters in them. And then they attack the civilian infrastructure. Under international law, even a lawful belligerent occupier is not to attack civilian infrastructure. This is how beyond the pale these organized criminals, Zionists in Israel, taking over to make a territory of Israel is over the Palestine area, territory and people. Sanders added that Netanyahu's government has unreasonably blocked humanitarian aid from reaching Gaza, causing thousands of children to face malnutrition and famine. Mr. Satanyahu, anti-Semitism is a vile and disgusting form of bigotry that has done unspeakable harm to many millions of people, Sanders said in the conclusion of his 2.5-minute speech. But please do not insult the intelligence of American people by attempting to distract us from the immoral and illegal policies of your extremist and racist government. It is not anti-Semitic to hold you accountable for your actions. And calling this minor demon Satanyahu is maybe giving this European, and I think I've read he's Polish actually, under a different name, this is a Zionist Federation Movement member, war criminal, much too credit if I just give him that name, Satanyahu. It is too much credit. This guy's just a mobster, organized criminal, that's about it, and he's getting away with it. And he's doing it for political reasons. It's all, we're going to have another story. Someone who analyzes this stuff explains this to us. So there you have it. If and you don't believe the guy behind the woodshed, a Jewish liberal member of the Compromise Unit Party says being anti-Zionist is not being anti-Semitic. You'd think he'd be honest enough, though, to add, because the Palestinians are Semitic people, and those of the political Zionist Federation movement committing an illegal occupation of Palestine are not Semitic. But he doesn't quite go that far. That apparently his handlers, that's a bridge too far for his handlers, to allow him to go ahead and put up the division, the other side, which is, in that case is proper regardless of what their intention is, but not so far as to actually tell more of the truth, whatever remaining intelligence is being insulted in Americans, I don't know, to the contrary anyway, that it allows it, that we actually see this going and continuing on. As we watch and hear the United States now defining what anti-Semitism is, regardless of whether that's true or not. Again, remember, statutory law can be, you define green to be red, it's red. People don't quite get this. When a statute is defined, that's it. You have to go to the statute, and that's how the courts treat it. If you try to treat it some anyway else, you're not going to go anywhere. But what does this mobster in Satanyahu do? With all the walls closing in around him, Satanyahu may start even larger regional war, is the analysis here. And it's all political survival. His position offers him an immunity against his crimes in his own government. Satanyahu, between a rock and a hard place, the Hague's arrest warrant threat combined with reported U.S. plans to sanction a radical Zionist idea battalion, which have apparently been shelved for now, constitute a low-quality, barely concealed effort by Western powers to pressure Netanyahu into making a deal with Hamas to end the war in Gaza and ultimately to agree to the creation of a Palestinian state, says Dr. Simone Sipsis. A deal with Hamas would mean Israel's defeat in the war with Hamas and the cancellation of the operation of Rafah in an uprising of the right-wing camp against Netanyahu, the exit of right-wing politicians and ministers from the government, its collapse, and new elections. Such a chain reaction, such a domino effect would transpire if he makes a deal with Hamas, Sipsis told Sputnik. In this context, the situation becomes even more dangerous since his only chance for survival politically is to fight and under the pressure is to unleash an even larger regional war. This cannot be ruled out since Israeli provocations toward Iran under Satanyahu's leadership are continuing. It's quite possible that the third outcome in this situation may occur, provocations against Iran and the beginning of a large-scale regional war with Iran. This is the only thing that can save Satanyahu, allow him to remain in power, escape responsibility, and prevent the collapse of the government. Therefore, the situation is extremely difficult with everything basically depending on this one person, the observer noted. But the Noiv, folks, the Noiv, this mobster Satanyahu, going to lash out everywhere. He doesn't listen to any law because there is nothing that he's going to agree to, especially in the holding for power and the immunity that it brings for him against his own accountability. Israel issues an ICC ultimatum. Don't back down, don't back down. This is what starts to escalate. This is kind of proving the point of the prior report. The Jewish state, so-called, has reportedly said it will punish Palestine if the court pursues its leaders. Think about that. They're going to punish Palestine if the court, a total different organization, pursues Israeli leaders for accountability. And look at the word punish. I tell you, America has the same laws as an open-air prison in Gaza. I'm not joking. 42 U.S.C. Section 1981. One of your equal rights is to be punished. And pains. And taxes. And it's all here in this story. As we keep reading one of these stories here. I think it's this one. Israel has warned the U.S. that it will punish the Palestinian Authority and cause its collapse if the United International Criminal Court issues arrest warrants for the Jewish state's leaders, Axios reported. Well, there it is, punish and Palestinian Authority. That's not Hamas. So I need to bring some context right here. If you're paying attention, you know Palestinian Authority is not in control, but part of the West Bank. There's two different governmental functions. Hamas is in Gaza and got elected, even though it was set up by Satan Yehu to be there so that they can create this turmoil. And I think Hamas decided it was going to break away, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. But the Palestinian Authority was set up by the West in order to control the Palestine situation as well. But they're in the West Bank. The West Bank, I think, is where there's energy, gas and oil. And that was stolen, I think, if that's right, from Syria. So there's a lot of nastiness going on. No one's straight up about anything. But no, they're not going to attack Israel's not going to go after Hamas for ICC. No, they're going to go after the Palestinian Authority. One possible measure could be to freeze the transfer of tax revenues that Israel collects for the Palestinian Authority. But without these funds, the Palestinian Authority would go bankrupt. So here we have an attack, an economic war attack, and it's against what? Your equal rights, taxes. They're going to withhold even that punishment so that someone dies, someone goes away, someone disappears. Another possible course of action would be an official decision to punish the Palestinian Authority, which would lead to its collapse. And a senior Israeli official said, well, the whole plan is to, Satan Yehu's plan is to get rid of the people so they don't have to have a two-state solution. There's no Palestinians. And that's not going so well for them, but that's the part. They claim they want a two-state solution. Satan Yehu doesn't want any Palestinians, so they don't have to have a problem. But the Noiv folks, where does one begin with these organized war criminals? On the other hand, maybe getting rid of another Western made-up government in the Palestinian, maybe getting rid of the Palestinian Authority would be a good thing and clear the air of the continuing undue Western influence on a purported self-determining Palestinian people. Remember, that was the original plan. Palestinians would be self-determining. But no, you got everybody with their fingers in the pie here making a mess out of everything. But maybe getting rid of the Palestinian Authority may be an interesting way to go. But Satan Yehu is doing it for his purpose. He's going to beat on these people, even though they're not really at war. He's not at war with them. He's at war with Hamas, he said. So understand all this. The West carves up the Palestinians. Hamas in Gaza, Palestinian Authority in the West Bank are two different governments. Hamas is the government propped up by the Satan Yehu and elected by the Palestinians in Gaza, if I have that all correct. And this is all done to force a two-state solution, which requires that the Zionist Federation movement is a state with its own land, stolen as it may have been, is being done, instead of the original plan to have a Jewish people reassimilate into the single existing Palestinian state and the government there. This is why the West is pushing this two-state solution. It recognizes this Zionist movement as something more than it actually is. And enter here Britain and its enduring boot of oppression relative to all this as well, as we see how it got started. We read, Israel is not a party to the Rome Statute, the treaty that establishes the ICC, and does not recognize the court's jurisdiction. Except, and remember, Israel did enter into that jurisdiction of that court. And the objection to the jurisdiction of the court is different than the one at Ukraine, where the ICC issued upon Western undue influence as well, on that now-known fraudulent allegation of child kidnapping and the warrant of arrest for Putin, where neither nation there it was a party to the Rome Statute. So in this case, the Palestinians have signed the the statute, and then the Zionists had answered into that court. So if in the Zionists didn't want to bring themselves subject to that foreign court, they ought not have messed with the Palestinians at all, first of all. And to keep that jurisdictional distance, let alone sealing the deal by answering in or to, or what's known as joining itself to the IC jurisdiction when a claim was made against it. And to prove this, despite Netanyahu's wanting to beat up on and punish an organization he is not at war with, they say, because it's Hamas he's after, likely because the Palestinian Authority is absolutely defenseless, because Netanyahu cannot beat Hamas. Exposing as well here Netanyahu's political vulnerabilities and self-serving political survival to threaten and beat up an innocent to cover his own failures and crimes, and wailing about how much it hurts the Zionists to beat the innocent. And I think, interestingly, if I think about that, I've seen a meme that memetic that depicts that very point. We read here that should a warrant of Netanyahu's name be issued, his travel could be restricted, as the 124 countries that recognize the court may consider themselves obligated to arrest him. If this threat is realized, would it be proper, since the United States and Britain and all the world agrees that it will now be lawful, or at least the new normal, to threaten to starve out the people on the other side of the tracks when a warrant of arrest is issued for you? If you think I'm talking about over there. They fabricate a condition and they blame you. And everyone seems to think that's quite fine. This is a regurgitated method that seems to work so well. And again, if it's good enough for one democracy, it's got to be good enough for another. Ukraine and Israel, the most democratic democracies, needing protection. Ukraine refused to comply with Convention on Protection of Human Rights and Freedoms. How quaint. Ukraine submitted an application to the Council of Europe for a partial suspension of some clauses of the European Convention of Human Rights and the freedoms of the country in connection with the martial law. The corresponding documents was published on the website in the international organization, and it is noted that the application itself was submitted on April 4th, Ukrainian news agency reports. According to the document, during the war, Ukraine will cease to comply with such provisions of the convention as inviolability of housing, up to forced alienation of private and communal property for the needs of the state, not democratic, folks, confidentiality of correspondence, telephone conversations and other correspondence, non-interference in personal and family life, freedom of movement and free choice of residence, the right of freedom of thought and speech, freedom of expression of views and beliefs, as well as the right to collect, store, and disseminate information. You see all these rights? They just want to get rid of these. The right to hold meetings, rallies, and demonstrations. The right to own, use, and dispose of one's property. Sounds so sustainable, too, doesn't it? WEF and Antony Blinken. The document also lists specific measures of actions that may be implemented during martial law in a violation of the convention, such as forced alienation of private communal property for the needs of the state, introduction of a curfew, special regime of entry and exit, the restriction of movement of citizens and foreigners, traffic, sounds like a two-minute city to me, doesn't it? Inspections of things, transport, luggage, cargo, office premises, and citizens' homes, prohibiting citizens who are on a military or special registration to change their place of residence or stay without proper permission, banned for citizens who are on military or special registration to change their place of residence or stay without proper permission. So what does democracy actually mean in the post-founding father era of war of terror, Lincolnized America, but martial law for sustainability? Because as the Lieber Code adopted into international law says, you know them when you see them, because they don't have to tell you. It's on and on. The United States funds this supposed democracy of democracies while it waives everybody's rights and actually imposes, if you look very carefully, it's imposing punishments that are your civil rights here in America. This is so ridiculously funny. At some point, I apologize. I had to laugh a little bit. And democracy and genocide must be forced upon the entire world as you see it expanding out. The United States doing it, but the UK is right there, always, and we see it again in the news. The US and the UK are pushing a total war on all fronts. The Iran-Israel clash has served as a catalyst for renewed escalation by Western leaders, and World War III cannot be ruled out. If we're not only World War V or VI, I don't know, but World War III, I think, is just a term just to throw out there. Western foreign policy is at large has taken on a very zero-sum and ideological character that bemoans the loss of hegemony and seeks to uphold it at all costs. It's a reactionary to the extent it does not have a vision for improving the world, but wants to take back the world the way it was. It is, in a sense, of entitlement and privilege. I don't see Satan Yehu answering any different, these exclusively chosen types. They're just criminals. So instead of World War III, wouldn't it be more proper to say a world at war, as we see this whole thing, that the United States intends a world at war because jobs and a dying debt economy, folks. Americans needing voter-placating jobs, building military-industrial complex weapons to murder people, just as Antony Blinken, idiot, said about appropriations not going to Ukraine, but for Ukraine. And the American workers by the glow of a nuclear weapons inferno may work and work and work. Pretty despicable. But this is where we're working toward. And as I looked, I'm way past, I suppose. This is BTWRLM 575, the episode here. You can't go wrong when you get behind a woodshed yourself. Because this is the only thing that's going to really protect you. You can't use representatives. It's not going to work. There's not going to be a way to stop this way. And the best we're going to do, even if this goes way south, is to be able to protect ourselves the best that we can. I don't know what else to say. You have to know enough about what's about around you in order to allow that to happen. And based in this UK and US want a world at war, and one of the types of war that we may have a fallout would be nuclear. This next idea may not be such a good idea, actually. The US to build a new doomsday plane. The command and control aircraft will allow the president to continue leading the country in a case of nuclear war. The US will develop a new doomsday plane intending to allow the president to continue leading the country in case of nuclear war and other major disasters that controls command and control centers on the ground, the Air Force has announced. Allow of the president to continue leading into nuclear war. Isn't that interesting? The $13 billion contract for the Survivable Airborne Operations Center project has been awarded to Sierra Nevada Corporation. Why? And why waste the funds then? Why build a plane intending to allow the feckless president to continue leading the country in case of a nuclear war or other major disaster they likely started in a country already controlled by the House of the Compromise, which appropriates funds to the deep state continuity of government overthrow of America already existing? Which, if you remember, Trump never dismantled, only emboldened. So maybe let's not build that plane at all so the leaders, so-called, will be encouraged to work real hard to avoid nuclear war or with other weapons of mass destruction because, and it's another way to alter and abolish the government as we see fit. If we don't build that plane and they feel threatened, maybe they're going to conform their decisions a lot better than what it looks like they want to do. And then they'll have the skin in the game there, and they won't be protected. They have the accountability of their decisions, and whether they protect, you know, there's no protection for their stupid or even self-promoting mistakes is not covered. They're just going to have to see what goes on, whether it, like we do. That's if the corrupt government isn't already overthrown by the continuity of government since 2001, of course, at which case this plane is expendable, merely more largesse feeding the military-industrial complex swamp creatures, which they would use to destroy, to put people into more horror and control them even worse. And so they're not a bashful eating their own, as we see this even in the political cycle. Eating their own they are, and yet people seem to be entertained by it and gobble it up themselves. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. denied the wild and inaccurate claims from his opponent, former President Donald Trump, that he is a Democrat plant. There can be no worse thing than that. No, listen here, listen very carefully about what they're talking, how they get people focused. RFK Jr. is worse than a Democrat plant. So he can deny Trump's claim. RFK Jr. is a rabid globalista with a Kennedy name. And I've talked about this guy, looked at his record. It doesn't take long to figure out what he's talking about. Talk about traditions, anti-property, anti-production. I've talked about this before, so I'm not going to go through that. But all these candidates are bought by the Zionist occupiers comprising and compromising this American nation and the so-called leaders they throw for us to choose. Kennedy took on X, took to X on Saturday following Trump's allegation posted on Truth Social on Friday. Trump alleged that the independent candidate is a radical left liberal who's been put in place to order to help crooked Joe Biden, the worst president in the history of the United States, get reelected, and a vote for him would be a wasted protest vote. Kennedy switched from the Democratic ticket midway through his campaign to become an independent candidate. Before launching his campaign, Kennedy worked as an environmental lawyer. Just like I was telling and explained to you, they use those water, he developed those water keepers, I found out or understand, and they went global, and they are the people that are destroying this place. They use, again, water, they use the need of water, they use the indigenous need of water to destroy water rights, destroy property rights. Kennedy has done that. We are always, and when I was Jefferson Money just doing comments, having to deal with their organizations, completely in violation of water law and property law. Didn't care about savings, I didn't care about the law. A lawyer, so-called. No. So it's even worse than I said just now. He's not only a globalista, but the worst kind, the Greta-type environmental lawyer of the well-known association, usurping the American nation under the name of the American Bar Association, the organization of which promotes sustainable development and whose rules guide the judicial branches of every state. And for a quick reference, I've discussed this before, go to Tennessee Law, go to the Supreme Court rules, go to their website, and go look them up. Go look up the ABA. Well, look up how much influence they already have, and the judicial branch, so-called. All the same members. We at the Jefferson Mining District identified this national overthrow back in 2013. We sued the state officials, agents, the political parties, some representatives, the senators, the Bar Association itself, and we're suing for the usurpation of the Republican form of representative government, destroying production and state obligations and duty to protect all that. Or the method that they used to do that was through the public-private partnerships, which this world fascist overthrow is, and hat tip to the now fired up and deceased Max Azzarella for identifying that. We were standing shoulder to shoulder about this, even though he comes 10 years later, whereupon all those parties defaulted to our lawsuit, saying that they're doing it. If one thinks this is a new wild idea or conspiracy theory, Trump did no better, and I've explained the district attempt to work with Trump to clean the national swamp and couldn't get enough through to, or not even a thank you for your concerns letter, or the now go to Hades letter here, even after 4 certified mailings and delivery. We could not get a response. Now, thank you for your concerns, now go away. No, we didn't even get that. And remember, Trump has quadrupled down, jabbed down on his vaccines are the greatest thing, saving lives, implementation of the great COVID swindle, and the globalist reset. He did that. And while JFK Jr. Takes the counter position despite his choosing the rabid big tech lawyer Nicole Shanahan as his running mate, happens to be his largest donor, which can't understand graft starts early. His efforts in other areas to destroy production in America, as I presented months ago, and just reiterated our 2013 lawsuit, the globalist agents, they're all defaulted. All these folks, again, defaulted. They will not answer to this. They can't. It's from the governor on down. You want to talk about these states being taken over? From the governor on down. People look at this and think it's all normal, what they see. And we see that reflection in the cheerleaders of all these different candidates. Their cheerleaders thinking their candidate's different, despite grovel. They all grovel for APAC Zionist support. Fascinating. And worse yet, they demand ID to vote. These people now, we got to have ID to vote. In the face of a push for digital ID token citizenship, all the while being federal residents subject to further consent to enjoy civil rights, equal rights. Those exactions of every kind of 42 U.S.C. 1981, folks. Freedom, folks. Not being free, it's freedom. Freedom. It's a term. People misspeak it and pronounce what they are living in freedom, but it's the same difference. It's the slave that thinks that they're free is the best type of slave to have on a plantation. That's what they're doing to us. And people agree with it. That's astonishing. But speaking of the U.S. House of the Compromise, sponsor of TikTok ban in Iran, Palestine sanctions, gets 1,400% bump in APAC donations. U.S. Representative Michael McCaul, Republican of Texas, who sponsored the 21st Century Peace Through Strength Act, Orwell, that passed the U.S. House of Representatives, saw contributions of his campaign from the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, increase an incredible 1,413% during the 2024 election cycle when compared to the 2022 cycle. The 21st Century Pact Through Strength Act includes the Repo Act, which enables Biden to seize Russian assets frozen in U.S. banks to send them to Ukraine, that other democracy, right? They're taking away everyone's rights under martial law. Well, it is clear if how and why APAC would push, it's unclear how APAC would push for the theft of Russian assets and other major provisions of the bill are directly related to issues APAC and other pro-Israeli lobbying groups advocate for. The sanctions provisions of the bill are self-evidently pro-Israel actions designed explicitly to harm Israel's adversaries in the region. Billionaire Bill Ackman, one of Israel's most virulent supporters, who gained infamy last year after publicly doxing Ivy League students who made pro-Palestinian statements, blamed the app directly for the support of Palestine among American youth. Quoting, TikTok is massively manipulating public opinion, he wrote. Oh, like the government's not? Like YouTube's not? Like the CDC part is not? Like people with any kind of agenda is not? Like the UN is not? Like the WHO, not the rock group, the owl, the little people Whoville, the World Health Organization is not, like the WEF is not. In December, the Anti-Defamation League CEO Jonathan Greenblatt blamed TikTok for intensifying anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. But remember Bernie Sanders' statement. So there you have it. Out of the mouth of the Zionism Defamation League, TikTok is targeted because of its anti-Zionist position, which APAC is the funding arm unduly influencing the U.S. House of Compromise to enact special interest legislation to aid and abet the genocide and anti-Semitism in Gaza. For years, McCaul was a non-entity for pro-Israel lobbying groups like APAC. Elected in 2004, McCaul received no contributions from pro-Israel groups until the 2020 cycle. To date, McCaul has received $119,550 from APAC in 2024 alone, a 1,413% increase, by far his largest contributor, dwarfing the second place Axis Technology Solutions, which donated $16,600. So thanks, Mr. Michael McCall, Republican of Texas, for infringing our right to speak, associate, and acquire information to providing the basis for an informed constituency, you uniparty loser. Deepfake democracy, how AI is disrupting the biggest election on Earth. The term deepfake derives from the deep learning and fake and signifies the digital manipulation of media to substitute one's person's image with another. Cephologist Dayanand Nane explains that the deepfake videos can influence a public opinion and discredit people and politicians. Deepfakes exploit several psychological vulnerabilities, he said. Now, what I thought right there is they know you better than yourself. Okay? So that's I always see this right here, and they're always looking to exploit things you may not even understand about yourself, but they know it. Humans have a natural tendency to trust what they see and hear. Deepfakes leverage this by creating realistic content. Moreover, cognitive bias, such as confirmation bias, where we are more likely to believe information that confirms our pre-existing beliefs, makes us susceptible to deepfakes that align with our viewpoints. And that spoke to me about so-called alternative media, people that are successful, the millionaires in alternative media, that have vast followings, people that come together, and I think this is where we see that example, even in the alternative media. People, they've learned, the presenters, the influencers, learn how to speak to that bias, and they are very good at what they do, and they gain that bias, that group of listeners. And when you look at the listenership behind the woodshed, you find it very few. I don't do that. I wonder why. I wonder what that means. I wonder if that's a proof. Moreover, deepfakes will work as reverse psychology, negatively impacting the party being endorsed once it becomes clear they are deepfakes. Deepfakes transfer attention from content to intent in creating these fakes. And that's what we will be the influencing factor, Bahashia, the founder of Cyber Bullying Awareness, Action, and Prevention said. In my opinion, that was the agenda of these videos. Bahashia, who studies the impact of technology on human behavior, said, the intelligent voter may understand the true agenda, but a majority act on a sentiment rather than a rational decision. These AI-generated visuals have the ability to undermine any tracking system on the internet, and that is precisely why it's nearly impossible to determine whether an image is real or fake. Kumar, the co-founder of the CEO of Lighthouse AI, said, using generative AI models, the cost of producing high-quality content, both good and bad, has come down drastically. AI tools enable manipulation on an unimaginable scale. Unimaginable scale. It's beyond, folks. This is where they work. These are the ones that know you better than yourself, said the cyberspace expert, who has created data science methods to tackle fake reviewers on e-commerce platforms. Quote, it plays a key role in creating a realistic-looking but entirely fabricated and misinformative content. One of the major challenges of investigators face is that the new detectors are developed. The generative technology evolves to incorporate methods to evade detection from those detectors. And go back to the story where I said the ChatGPT, given a CVE, can figure out an exploit, a vulnerability, and do it, exploit, and carry it out immediately, as soon as it gets understanding about it. It is harder and harder to identify deepfakes and the advancement of technology and the ease of access at lower cost, Kumar said. Unfortunately, there is no immediate resolution in sight. This is what I was saying again, confirming almost what I said before. I don't know how we combat an AI-generated exploitation system. It works at the speed of electrons. India's Keystone Cops are one step behind cyberspace bad actors, unable to discern deepfakes from real videos and unable to trace their origins, left with the sole recourse of blocking them, which by that time it's too late. And so that's the other, the immediacy of that is also a problem. You just seeing something could be enough to start to plant seeds. How vulnerable we can be. And it takes a lot of effort actually to keep, trying to keep a pace of that in order to keep a buffer to maintain that, that ability in us to not be persuaded. And again, we're dealing in an area that each one of us may not know about ourselves that is being exploited. And these are the kind of things that I found very, very depressive in a way when I read the Protocols of Elder Zion, but it was also almost like the phoenix. At the end of the weekend, after reading all that and working through it, I realized I saw some exceptions. And that was a big revelation within that document, to see we're not helpless. We do have protections. It takes a bit of work to set those up for ourselves, and we're a lot less vulnerable to these types of things. You get into a digital realm, you got no control of that either. So that's another part of this. But we move into staying with that in information and deepfakes, being unable to discern deepfakes from real, truthful information. We see YouTube failed to delete 60,000 requested videos since the start of the Russian military campaign against Ukraine in February 2022. Authorities in Moscow have repeatedly taken issue with U.S. video hosting platforms' failure to remove content at their request. So understand all the integration. You got the countries that are coming in to impose themselves. Then you got the Googles that want to make the profit, that don't care, look to exploit, that will pass their own agendas on. Again, that's all programming, seeding conditions that are going on by the viewership generally. Google has been under pressure since 2021 over its failure to delete that content that Moscow deems illegal, but hasn't removed 60,000 illegal videos. They have YouTube has removed dozens of lawful Behind the Woodshed episodes, which would have saved millions of lives using lawful remedies against government tyranny if they had been seen, is the problem. Appearing Google is not interested to follow law in any country to promote its anti-don't be evil agenda is the problem. So we kind of chuckle, it's serious, but we kind of chuckle when YouTube doesn't want to, they want to get rid of us so fast, and yet your information's truth is the problem. That's being handed over, the public-private partnership power is being handed over by the government to do that. Because that's their agenda. That's what they want. That's what they're doing. They're adjusting. They're transforming your mind as they do this. Even if you're resistant. And remember, they said it can be worked a reverse psychology, if you will. When you find out, oh, that's not good, then that flips you around. That may be setting you up for a different thing. It's quite insidious what they're doing. So then you have to ask, what is the truth in an age of euphemism, as we look here, with a discussion between Tucker Carlson and Alexander Dugin, the philosopher of Russia. They discuss a new liberalism and its role in the fate of the Western civilization. The philosopher said, Alexander Dugin, the philosopher said that Putin is a traditional leader who defends traditional values which run counter to those currently in vogue in the West. During the conversation, Dugin argued that liberal ideology, which has essentially become uncontested in the West since the fall of the Soviet Union, is leading to the demise of the concept of family. Family is being destroyed in favor of this individualism, he said, adding that the natural progression of liberalism will lead to abandoned human identity. Let me just interject right here. That is the frame of a humanist view, isn't it? Not mankind. It's a human identity. At any rate, so I'm trying to lead this a bit to show you there's a misunderstanding, it seems to me, and I'm going to get to here in a moment, the explanation of it. Understand when, let's say, in the United States, we have the right or the traditional value, family values type thing, values, there you go, sustainability. Those again can be used to, in these biases, to enamor people, to get them have confidence in what you're doing. The next phase, he says, after the abandoned human identity, the next phase is new liberalism. Now it is not about the rule of majority, but it is about the rule of the minorities. It is not about individual freedom, but it is about wokeism, Dugin said. It is not democracy, it is totalitarianism. Now, we can hear all this philosophizing, this word salad. We can look at the last sentence of his statement and cut through that. That the West is not democracy, it is totalitarianism. So let's also throw in here the truism that a leader has to keep the confidence of the people of the country to do anything potentially controversial, such as, let's say, the special operations where Russians will die. And Putin has been able to do that with the Ukraine problem. He did that by using traditional values, making it appear that he's a traditional leader. And he's speaking to the Russian spirit as well. But what if all of that is a front to cover the new sustainable Russia? We have another article on the same thing that moves this conversation along a little bit. When Putin came to power, from the very beginning, he started to extract Russia from global influence. To extract Russia from global influence. He started to contradict the global progressive agenda, tried with success to restore traditional values, sovereignty of the state, Christianity, traditional family, he said, explaining that Western progressives saw this development as being in opposition to their values. Has Putin contradicted the global progressive agenda? He's promoting sustainable development with China. He's promoting a global Soviet. He cannot be contradicting the global progressive agenda, despite all the traditional claptrap cover that philosopher Dugin is enamored of in him. Putin is gaining the confidence of the people while condemning them to the Siberian panopticonocratic plantation. This is also something I've been reporting on. It's something I've been critical of what's going on to the Russian people. And they're susceptible to the Soviet, this thing that's coming up. And I say the Soviet, if you know, listen to Nikki Rapana, the late Nikki Rapana, she would speak of it this way too. They're already susceptible to what's the future that they want. And Putin looks like he's a traditional leader. He wants to ascribe to traditional and promote traditional values, but all of that's irrelevant to sustainable development. Remember, like Christianity, you can embrace Christianity. You're going to be unified. There's all inclusiveness, remember? So he can individually promote things that people receive. And in the United States, you have the liberal and you have the conservative. Or let me say you have the right, or you have family values, whereas maybe the progressive doesn't. I don't understand that. That's the truth. The point is you have these values that they prey upon. If a leader comes along like Trump and prays to those and plays to those values, you get cheerleaders for Trump. They come in and Biden speaks to progressives and liberal. These are all just words, euphemism, just words. Then he will gain that camp of people. In the United States, we have this dichotomy. That plays this game that there's some kind of a competition going on. And it's not. They use that confidence you built in them while you watch around and they move the other agenda along. That's what I'm seeing in Russia. I'm concerned for the Russian people in that regard. Putin's not doing anything that's fending off the progressive agenda. Unless he's a really high-level player that he's making it look like he is, so that he does keep the confidence. He makes it look on the world stage that he's putting on the international agenda that they'll accept, and yet he will be an independent. They will be standing up on their own and will have this other thing going on. They will be that example that we, the United States, ought to have been. And I don't think that's going to be happening either, because they are the Soviet, essentially. It is Russia. It's a big continent. It's a big piece of the continent. It's a rich country. It doesn't have that many people. It will be a force to be reckoned with. It is one now. But to say that he's a traditional leader while he's pushing sustainable development, while he pushed Sputnik V vaccine, a part of the great COVID swindle, I don't think so. The philosopher Dugin, his opinion aside, I don't think so. I think the philosopher Dugin, Alexander Dugin, may be making a mistake, short-sighted, or he's a change agent. He's one of the people that's eventually promoting, giving additional confirmation cover to Putin as they bring that whole nation in, like other nations are. I'm not picking on them. The United States is doing it to their people in their way. All these nations are doing it in their way. They have to keep the confidence, the trust of the people. But some of the people aren't saying anything anyway. All of Europe's that way. But this is, I thought, was a very interesting discussion. Very interesting observation. Sounds very intellectual, very philosophical, deep thought. And it's not that he's wrong about how the dynamic works, but ultimately, being enamored by the tradition, and that Putin speaks to family, speaks to production, self-reliance, an independent monetary system, but they don't. See, that's the other thing. That he's still bringing them into the digital panopticon. They're already tying that in. They're doing it underneath the color of the war as well. He's using these tools to keep people distracted enough to bring in the future that they want. Doesn't seem to me to be too traditional or in contradiction to the global progressive agenda. And I'm intrigued by the interview. Again, you always will listen for people that are very intelligent. And I'm just starting to wonder, I'm getting to a point in my life, I'm wondering, how intelligent are these? How are these people? We listen to them. Do they really understand what they're talking about? In this case, if they do, then they're change agents. If they don't, they're missing it too. And I guess in a way we're getting to these experts, people we put on pedestals. It's a dangerous thing to do. In a way, I have no problem in my mind just challenging Alexander Dugin, however exalted he is for Russia. I'm seeing some real serious distractions going on. And everybody has these vulnerabilities, and maybe Alexander Dugin has the same type of blind spots. And I'm hoping to expose these things, whether or not you ever see them for you, that you are aware to look for them, that you are aware to listen for them, see them. Whatever sense is the strongest in you, start using that and develop the other senses. Because there's people out there that know you better than yourself. They know how to push your buttons. They know how to not push your buttons. They know how to get... We're all looking for also to be... Well, those of us that want to be peaceful, we just want to make friends, right? We just want to have a nice place, a world to live. We all get along. We're not seeing that in the world, but we still long for that. Family's a big deal. The traditions are a big deal. Culture is a big deal. Then there's a side that says no. That's the division in the world. To watch somebody actually promote the certain aspects, traditions, as we say, the traditional thing, the family, family life, business, whatever, the production, and yet bringing on what I'm noticing, what I've been seeing, what we sued in 2013 is a destruction in America, is a destruction globally. Can't be a good thing. Cannot be a tradition. The lawsuit was, we're saying tradition needs to rule here because that's the law. And the people we sued didn't have an answer for that. And I knew that because they don't deal in the law. As I say, reflexive law, so called through the Bar Association judges, is not law. It's what they feel at the time. It's reflexive. It's reflex action. Essentially to what's in the mind of the judge based on what their politics is. Because I just realized and found out if I had a question relative to legislating from the bench, when I saw a judge where there's a remedy that the legislature enacted and the judge will not give that remedy, that's legislating from the bench. He denied a law under cover of being a law officer. Is Putin, being under color of a traditionalist, family values, when in fact where he's taken the country has nothing to do with that, and it's irrelevant what your family values are going to be. Your footprint will become more important. Your social credit, your control, your behavior becomes more important. And whatever you think you believe now, it gets altered. And again, those occupiers, are only going to do enough to keep you down underneath the sense of stepping up and doing something. So this is the thing I keep saying. It's not just, knowledge is not power. It's knowledge applied through proper action that becomes powerful. And you're watching Putin, in my sense, unless he's got this high-level gaming going on, he's really going to come out the top of it, really, really playing quite a few levels. He's playing the game. He's getting people enamored with what he's doing, confident, trustworthy in him. He's doing a good job. He's a very intelligent guy. But it appears he's bringing in that other system that is not traditional at all. None of it is traditional. It's global. And I don't know how you go from non-traditional to not say it's globalist when you're gone global. And he's working into a system that's digitized and it's already sitting to be received by a global system. Notwithstanding my question from last week, what is this unknown thing that they look like they're wanting to destroy this whole thing, completely destroy it? What's going to take its place? I haven't seen the evidence of it. Because of that, I don't know that it's coming. What I don't know is what I don't know right there, right? And so all they have to do is get the confidence. The system's failing. They bring in something and they can get people to be confident in it. If everybody's singing the praises for digital IDs and CBDCs and everything, this is what happens, and no one has a counter word, like you might hear behind a word shed, on even just in the consideration, as we saw the Covey swindle, the suggestion, you saw what people did on a suggestion of a horror word called pandemic that was ascribed to be a killer. You saw what people did is what I see people doing with this. And philosopher, writer, Alexander Dugin looks like he's doing the same thing as anybody, one of us, in accepting that Putin is simply a traditionalist who is contradicting the global progressive agenda, being completely blind to the fact of what every element, you know someone, you see them, every element Putin is doing on the global stage is to bring Russia into that the future that they want. We definitely have to distance ourselves from, you can call it a progressive agenda. We put a label on it. It is destruction. It's destruction of everything that we, people that ever thought we had to be free to do what we want, is going to be attacked and going to be gone. As I was reading these tabs, you're hearing the setup. We talk about the 2-minute city, the 15-minute city. No, they're going down to the 2-second city. They're getting us tied in that quickly. The science fiction is gone. It's here, what they've been doing. So I ask that we take that serious. I ask that we interject ourselves where we can, where our skill sets will allow it to be a real resistance. Not just say, oh, we know this is corrupt and then shrug our shoulders. The corrupt Netanyahu, Satan Yehu, counts on the fact that no one's going to stop him. And it's all simply an ego trip for him. And he's CYA, protecting himself because his position is an immunity. He's a criminal. He's evading accountability. It's time for we bring accountability. Maybe to ourselves first, and then work that way out. I hope something I said today will cause you to think. More importantly, cause you to start taking action. Make sure you're protecting yourself first, your family, again, very important, and then maybe your neighbors, as they will be in receiving your example, to do that for everybody. I'll be with you next week. Tech tips or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listens to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone.
Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.